I'm Mark Golub, and in the news, of course, the horrific attack on a Hanukkah celebration in Muncie, New York, where a 37-year-old man, Grafton Thomas, from Greenwood Lake in Orange County, New York, drove 20 miles to the Orthodox community of Muncie, New York, and broke into the home of Rabbi Chaim Rotenberg, who was hosting a party for some 100 guests celebrating the seventh night of Hanukkah. Thomas broke in, brandishing a large machete-like knife, began slashing and stabbing at anyone he could reach, stabbing five Jews, critically wounding two of them, including Rabbi Rotenberg's son. One of the Jewish heroes who confronted Thomas, Joseph Gluck, took down Thomas's license plate as he fled the scene, and later that night, Thomas was captured by the police in Harlem. In and of itself, the event takes your breath away. A man stalking Jews with the intent of murdering them, and our heart goes out to Rabbi Rotenberg and the entire Jewish community of Muncie, New York. But the context of the attack magnifies its significance, and the concern and the fear it engenders in the Jewish community is palpable. For suddenly there's been an outburst of violent attacks on Jews. Since December 8th, there have been 13 physical anti-Semitic attacks in New York alone. 13 physical attacks. There were physical assaults on a Jewish man, a Jewish woman, on two Jewish children, virtually every single day. And despite the horrific murders in Pittsburgh and Poway, this feels different. This is different. One group, Jews, are now being singled out for attack after attack after attack. And this is not to say that America is becoming anti-Semitic in any way. This is nothing to suggest that Americans are becoming Jew haters. And even with the Omars and the Talibs, and even with the ugly BDS movement in the halls of academia, there's no systematic or governmental anti-Semitism. But on the streets, in pockets of American society, a base and vile anti-Semitism that's always been simmering below the surface is becoming more and more visible and is manifest in acts of violence. So what's really going on? More important, how should you feel? What should Jews be doing? What should the Jewish community be doing in the face of this anti-Semitism? Well, for some insight, I'm so pleased to be joined once again by the CEO of B'nai B'rith International, Dan Mariashen. Dan, thanks so much for joining us again on JBS.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be with you.
So, Dan, first just a general comment from you. What's the attack in Muncie mean to you? And as you hear me say, it feels different to me. As horrific as the murders in Poway and prior to that in Pittsburgh were, this feels different to me. I want to know how you experience it and what this all means to you.
No, I think I share your feeling exactly. I think one thing that impressed me this morning when I looked at the newspapers, the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Washington Post leads with the story about Muncie. Now, you know, for years, the number of incidents of anti-Semitism by any measure, by any study, has been increasing. And the media has not paid attention. The major media has not paid attention, really, until today. And it really, to see the headline in the Washington Post really was an eye-opener for me. Because what we've had until now is kind of an apathy. There's a disinterest. And maybe it's not as bad as it appears, but Muncie really was an eye-opener. Look, I think you asked the question, what is it that we should be doing? I think we need to be telling our government officials, the church leaders with whom we have interreligious discussions, as well as with the media and others, we have to ask people to drop everything they are doing and to take this matter seriously. In the case of New York City, where you have a situation, by the way, not only in New York, you have it in San Francisco too, where so-called nonviolent crimes will not result in arrests, will not result in prosecutions, where people are let out without bail. What kind of message does that send to people who will go back on the street and perhaps commit these kinds of attacks again?
Okay, but these are violent crimes. This is not, you know, I don't like a swastika. And I've been saying on JBS over and over again, there are kids, there are unstable people, there are hateful people, and they'll put up signs and they'll draw a swastika and they'll even say stupid, hateful things. And none of that should be tolerated. But it's very different. We cross a line when all of a sudden people are getting hit on the head. A guy gets beaten up just blocks from Grand Central Station in broad daylight on the streets of New York City. This is not the same, and these are acts of violence, Dan.
No, and what happened in New York was the woman who committed the attacks, the slaps on the three women on the street, from what I understand, was also released. So they're being treated. Those who carry out these acts are being treated as if these were nonviolent crimes, when in fact, as you say, they are not.
Yes.
So I think it has to be taken seriously, and whatever bully pulpit is available for these public officials to use, they need to speak out loudly. They need to make certain in their public pronouncements that this isn't going to be accepted. And if you carry this out, they should make object lessons of those who do as a guide to others who might consider engaging in this kind of activity. I want to say one other thing about New York, if I can. I think
please
that it's shameful, really, that in a city to which Jews have given so much, and Jews have lived in New York over 350 years, so many Jews who live in this country have their roots in Brooklyn. I'm one of them. To think that in Brooklyn, especially, this large number of attacks has been carried out is deeply distressing.
I understand.
And it really is up to the officials of the city of New York to get serious about it.
Okay. I have a sensitive question to ask you, and I want you to give me the best answer you can. We have seen some real hate come out of white supremacists in America. And the shootings in Poway and in Pittsburgh, it looks like these are white supremacists who are part of this crazed, violent mentality of America. But in Brooklyn and in greater New York, much of the anti-Semitism is coming from the African-American community. And what we saw in Jersey City, which was terribly upsetting, was committed by African-Americans. What we see in Muncie is African-American. This is not to say to anyone that the African-American community as a community is anti-Semitic, but it is to say that there is some kind of pocket inside the African-American community in Brooklyn and elsewhere. Here's a guy who travels 20 miles to Muncie to attack synagogues. He can't get into the synagogue in Muncie. He ends up in the rabbi's house. And at the same time, American Jews are very sensitive to the fact that the African-American community has been also under virtual siege for generations. And there's a reluctance to say anything that would be critical. So the Jew is caught between what's the reality and also trying to be as sensitive as he or she can possibly be. I want to know how you would deal with the issue. Because when B'nai B'rith International put out its release, there was no mention of this being part of any African-American participation. And the only organization that I've seen that actually referred to the African-American community came from the Wiesenthal Center in L.A. But I want your sense here and your insight and guidance. How does the American Jewish community handle the fact that at the moment, certainly in parts of this country, and New York, the greater New York area is an example, Brooklyn, your hometown, is an example, there seems to be an anti-Semitism coming out of the African-American community?
Well, I think, look, the way that I think we need to deal with this is to appeal to church leaders in the community, in the neighborhood, to appeal to elected officials who represent those neighborhoods in New York, public figures, celebrities. Wherever we look, there are people who can speak out. And as I said, you don't have to be only a public official to use a bully pulpit, to speak out, whether it's in the community or outside the community, to send a message that it's unacceptable. That's, to me, the first place that I would go would be to get that critical mass of community leaders to stand up and say that this is not acceptable and we're not going to accept it. And I think that's something that can be done and I think is being done now. I think that we've come to the point now where those people who lead in communities, oftentimes in churches, need to speak out to folks on the street as well as the rest of us, that this won't be tolerated.
I think you say it perfectly. I agree with you 100%. It has to become socially unacceptable to both say anti-Semitic things, write anti-Semitic things, and certainly it's beyond the pale to engage in any kind of physical assault on Jews and community leaders in the African-American community, in the Christian community in general, in the halls of Congress. All of them must be saying in no uncertain terms, this is unacceptable. And I think, I hear that's what you're saying, Dan, and I think ultimately the question becomes, can people like you and other people who are in major positions of leadership in the Jewish community in some way make that happen? What's your sense?
We have no alternative. We have no alternative. It's either going to get worse or it's going to get better. And now that this secret is out, now that the media is giving it front page attention, this is the moment to capitalize on that approach of calling on people to speak out, because in 3 weeks and 2 weeks it'll be forgotten until the next spate of incidents. This is the moment where we really need to do this. Look, we can't go into every house. You can't speak to every family. It's impossible to do that. So you have to look to people who other people look up to, or other people follow, or role models, or good examples, or what call it whatever you will. And this needs to be a community effort. And by the way, that's the good thing about this country. I mean, we have this kind of comfort level, if you will, with something uncomfortable as this is, more than uncomfortable, it's stressing. But we have the ability to reach out. It's not like it is in other countries, which perhaps are more homogeneous. The fact that we are all living together under one roof, whether it be in a city or whether it be in this country, I mean, those things are important in terms of communicating these kinds of messages. And we have no alternative but to do it.
Dan, I can't thank you enough. And, you know, there are a few people who are that I rely upon as much as I do you, and I hope that you and all those who are at B'nai B'rith International do whatever is necessary, and I hope you'll let me continue to talk to you about this. I believe now this is an issue that will not go away right away, so I will be chasing you, all right?
Okay. Thank you very much, Mark.
You'll be well, Dan. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Bye-bye.
The thoughts of Dan Mariashen, CEO of B'nai B'rith International. And now on our phones, we have another individual for whom I have the highest respect and affection. He's the CEO of the American Jewish Committee, David Harris. David, thanks as always for giving us some time here on JBS.
Mark, it's my pleasure.
So, David, as you look at the events that obviously are now consuming our attention and our hearts go out to all those in Muncie, what's the event as such mean to you? As I said earlier in the program, this feels different to me. We've had many attacks, but they've been part of the American violence scene of late, David. There's attack after attack after attack, specifically targeting Jews. And then it now manifests in this horrific attack in Muncie. As you watch it, what's it mean to you?
First of all, that any belief by American Jews of a certain age of innocence should by now unfortunately long be over. What we're talking about now is a veritable epidemic of attacks against Jews.
Yes.
And we're talking here about attacks against Jews as Jews.
Yes.
And just in the course of Hanukkah, of the 8 days of Hanukkah, every single day there was at least one attack against Jews in the New York area, and of course the most horrific, the one in Muncie on Saturday night. So the remaining innocence is shattered. We have to face the reality that there is an issue. It's a big issue. It's not going away anytime soon. And on the one hand, we have to seek heightened security. That's our obligation, especially for Jewish institutions of all kinds. And yet, on the other hand, we must not allow ourselves to become Marano Jews.
Yes. Yes.
To begin to hide behind our doors and our curtains and practice our Jewish identity within our homes and their safety without expressing them publicly. And to me, the most impressive thing, perhaps of all, that came out of Saturday night was the fact that even after the horrific attack and the fact that five people were rushed to the hospital and all the chaos that we can only imagine, the community continued to insist that it was Hanukkah.
Yes.
And there was a need to affirm their identity and continue to celebrate the holiday.
Yes.
That, to me, says something about Jewish pride.
Okay. So, David, if someone were to ask you how frightened are you or how frightened should they be, what would you answer? If somebody said to you, David, can I still wear a yarmulke on the streets of Manhattan or on the streets of Brooklyn or anywhere in this country, what would you answer?
My first answer is always going to be the same, and that is it's a very personal decision. It's not for me, I believe, to tell someone else what to do or how to conduct themselves in public, whether to wear a kippah or not. All I know is that I will spend my professional lifetime, as I have, defending the rights of Jews to be Jews.
David, we may see this a little differently. If someone were to ask me, you know, is it safe? Do I think it's safe for them to wear a yarmulke? And again, I agree with you. Everybody has to make their own decision. But if I were asked, I would say no one should be reluctant to wear a yarmulke on the streets of New York or in Brooklyn, and that I don't believe America or Americans as a society are in any way anti-Semitic, that there are pockets of hate in this country, and at the moment they are expressing themselves specifically against Jews. But in general, I don't want Jews to be afraid. And what you said was so important to me. I don't want us to become Marano Jews who are so frightened of being Jewish, they only are doing it behind closed doors. I don't believe that's necessary. And I'm wondering what you think.
I completely understand the sentiment, and I largely agree with it, Mark. The only issue for me is, I myself do not wear a kippah. I do not have tzitzit emerging from under my coat or my jacket or my shirt. So the risks that I presumably run in America today may be slightly different than the person who does. I completely respect and seek to defend all those who wish to make those choices and affirm their Jewish identity very visibly. But if someone were to come to me and say, should I or shouldn't I, I believe that it's for me to say it's your decision to make. I respect the decision you make. And it's my job, particularly my job at the American Jewish Committee, to make sure that every Jew in America feels as safe as can possibly be. Every Jew.
Okay. It sounds to me, David, that you are worried that people, that Jews now are not safe on the streets of Manhattan or the streets of Brooklyn.
Well, I know two things now, Mark. Number one, AJC did a national survey of American Jews. In a way, it was a landmark survey. It was released in October of 2019.
Yes.
And one of the striking findings in that survey was that 31% of the respondents, and we had close to 1,300 respondents. It was a very big survey. 31% said that they have sought to hide something about their Jewish identity in public out of concern or fear. We also learned from the same survey that roughly 25% of the respondents said that they will not go to a Jewish site today for fear of some kind of violence or terror. Those are not good statistics. They're worrisome statistics. And frankly speaking, you know, if you live in Borough Park or Williamsburg or Crown Heights, that's where much of the focus is. That's where Mayor de Blasio put much of his attention in his press conference just after Muncie. But what happened to the Tree of Life Synagogue in Pittsburgh, for example, or to the Chabad Synagogue in Poway, are also cautionary tales that it's not just Brooklyn. It's not just the Hasidic community or the Satmar community. Tree of Life was a conservative synagogue, as I recall. Things can happen randomly. Things can happen anywhere. There are lone wolves out there. There are copycats out there. There are people inspired by the tropes and conspiracy theories they find on the internet. So I don't misunderstand me. I'm a great believer in America. I'm a believer in the Jewish place in America. I'm immensely proud of what's been achieved in this country, both by America and by the Jewish community. But there is a moment in time here where there's reason for concern. It's not hysteria. It's not paranoia. It's a kind of quiet, calm concern that says, be a bit more careful. On the other hand, as we're launching a campaign here at AJC, be Jewish and proud.
Yes.
The two can coexist, Mark.
Absolutely. Well said. Look, I want to hear you speak to this sensitive issue. I just asked Dan the same question. It is clear that anti-Semitism comes from all parts of American society, and we see horrible things being done by white supremacists. At the same time, there are people in the New York area who are concerned that so much of the anti-Semitic attacks are coming out of the African-American community, and yet Jews are reluctant to call it out. What's your sense of this issue?
Look, first of all, in the case of AJC, you know, this story began for us in 2000, 2001 in Europe, where we were the very first to call out the resurging anti-Semitism. And we insisted then, Mark, and it comes to what happens here in the U.S., we insisted in Europe that there were three main sources of anti-Semitism. And those political leaders that were unwilling to acknowledge all three were playing political games with anti-Semitism.
Yes.
They weren't being serious.
Yes.
And those three, of course, were the extreme right, which was for many the easiest to finger.
Yes.
The neo-Nazis, the white supremacists,
yes,
the white nationalists. We all get that.
Right.
But when it came to the extreme left and when it came to jihadists, not all Muslims, but jihadists, we saw much more of a reluctance, a skittishness on the part of many politicians to actually name names. When we began to see the surge here in the United States, we applied the exact same thinking and said from the start, don't play games with anti-Semitism here. There are multiple sources of anti-Semitism. You cannot create a composite of one typology and say, this is the next anti-Semite in America. And the reason we said it was very clear, because there was anti-Semitism coming from the Charlottesville, Pittsburgh, Poway school of white supremacy, absolutely. But guess what? All the attacks in Brooklyn that we know of, all those that were caught on closed-circuit TV, what we saw in Muncie, what we saw in Jersey City, We're not coming from white supremacists.
Right.
In just about every case, as best as we could tell, they were coming from inside the African-American community.
Yes.
So again, to our point, don't weaponize anti-Semitism by trying to lay it all at the blame of right-wingers or left-wingers. If this is serious, and for AJC, it's deadly serious, you've got to be blunt about sources. If you're not, how do you fight the problem?
That is beautifully, wonderfully, and courageously said, David. I'm very impressed.
Let me add one thing, if I may,
please.
Mark. Let me add one thing.
Sure.
Because I'll go a step further. Just after Jersey City, and unfortunately, you know, as one event after another happens, you know, each one tends to recede in memory. But just after Jersey City, which was not long ago, a member of Congress, Rashida Tlaib of Michigan, tweeted.
Yes.
Her sorrow about what happened in Jersey City, and then she wrote three words on that tweet: "White supremacy kills." Now, forgive me, but she was trying to follow a political narrative. But guess what? Jersey City was not about white supremacy. It was about, if anything, the bizarre theories of black Hebrew displacement.
Yes.
of other Jews. That seemed to be the inspiration here, if there was one. But when that was exposed, Rashida Tlaib deleted her first tweet, and the other tweet that she issued was just a kind of bland, my heart breaks, thoughts and prayers, sorrow, with no interest in who the perpetrators were.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, if you're serious about anti-Semitism, call it out, whatever
mm-hmm.
it is.
Mm-hmm.
White supremacists, black Hebrews,
mm-hmm.
call it out.
Yes.
If you want to play games, because at the end of the day, this is about Republicans versus Democrats or progressives versus conservatives, then frankly speaking, I don't take it seriously. Not as a strategy for dealing with anti-Semitism, not at all.
Kol hakavod to you, David. I love talking to you all the time, David. And now that we're in New York, you've got to come sit in studio with me. I appreciate the insight. This issue is not going away. I'm going to chase you, and we will talk about it often. But I thank you for giving us some time now. It's very important that your voice be heard. Thank you so much, David.
Always my pleasure to speak with you and JBS.
Thank you. The thoughts of David Harris, CEO of the American Jewish Committee. At 9 p.m. tonight, Monday night, we'll be continuing to discuss the implications of the stabbing in Muncie, which will also air at midnight on Monday night and then at 3 p.m. on Tuesday afternoon, when I'll be joined by a marvelous panel. I hope you can be with us. My thanks, as always, to our director, Sloan Copeland, JBS Associate Director, Dara Golub, Technical Manager, Michael Paley, Transmission Manager, John McDevitt, and to the producers of this edition of In the News, Tisha Bader and Carol Lilienthal. Until the next time, I'm Mark Golub. Be well, my friends.